Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Film Philosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Film Philosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is the Walgreens version of Lando Calrissian.
The disrespect! You were like, earlier today, I was like, why are you being so mean to me? This is why, preemptively now. I get to be preemptively mean to you.
Is that what it is? On such an auspicious occasion, is that so? And that auspicious occasion is, of course, celebrating Star Wars Day, May the 4th. We are here joined by, of course, our intern slash part-timer slash stenographer, Amy.
Yay!
Who's in her Star Wars regalia.
The mild version, but yes.
Yes, and we are also joined by friend of the show, and of course, always welcome to the table, Marcus.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Which apparently, to my surprise, Marcus is a huge Star Wars nerd, so I'm glad we have him on today.
He's the only reason I know something sometimes.
Well, on behalf of all of our listeners, Marcus, thank you.
You're welcome.
We got a great show in store as we're going to be talking about Star Wars Day and all the things pertaining to it, especially one particular aspect that has been gaining more and more notoriety, and that is the television series, streaming series, however you want to categorize it. We're going to be talking about those and kind of the history of where it comes from on this great and awesome special episode. So before we do, Spencer, why don't you hit us with them opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website, filmphilosophers.com. Also, connect with us on social pages at facebook.com/filmphilosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmphilosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out over at our website at filmphilosophers.com, where we got over allegedly 300 episodes, anything from action, anime, comedy, even old Star Wars episodes where we've talked about on Star Wars Day, things such as this. Mm-hmm. You can check it all out over at our website, filmphilosophers.com. You can also check out where listen to us wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's either iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Let us know how we're doing. Give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
I think we have.
You know, right?
Yes.
The intern's still catching on.
Oh my God, you guys really have.
Yeah.
But like I said, we have a great show in store. I mean, we're kind of just going to dive right in, but Star Wars Day is kind of a special holiday for a lot of us nerds, a lot of us who have been following Star Wars since we were young, collected the little, you know, the little mini figures, the little toys, the whole Star Wars Legos collection, things like that, or been watching the shows ever since we were kids, watching the movies, watching anything that has to do with Star Wars. So it's been high time that this day, this wonderful day, has been kind of etched in historical fact. In fact, I believe now it is recognized as a actual holiday.
By the state of California, it is considered a state holiday.
Yeah.
I don't think state workers are going to get it off, but...
I mean, if I was a teacher, if I was a government worker, I would demand this day because it's like, I gotta watch my machete method, you know, versions of Star Wars. See, Marcus agrees. Everybody else at the table is like, what are you talking about?
What is machete method?
Please expound on what machete method is for the Trek people.
The Trek people? So, sorry, Spencer.
Hi.
So machete method is the theory in which you get a better concept of the overall Star Wars story by watching it in a very specific order. So the order is you watch episode 4. And then you watch episode 5, and then you can actually skip episode 1 and then go directly to episode 2, 3, then go to 6, and then you do 7, 8, and 9. Nowadays, the method has been updated to where you watch 2, 3, and then you watch Rogue One, and then you go back to 6, and then 7, 8, 9. But it adds a little bit more unique context to the story. Mm. So, there you go, little Star Wars nugget.
Okay.
Not that you're any better for it, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I am.
But like I said, we have a great show in store as we are going to be talking about, here on Star Wars Day, all things Star Wars, and of course, what Star Wars Day would be without the official fanfare music. I mean, Spencer, who's been in charge of our music for a good amount of time, picked a really good one. Thank you. Kudos.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make up for earlier. I'm just saying kudos.
Yeah. Okay.
But today we are going to be taking a deep dive into one of the aspects of Star Wars, and that is all of their TV streaming, their individual property, non-film shows, movies, things like that. Things that really do tend to get a lot more attention because they're a little bit more accessible for folks, people who have a chance, who have access to like Disney Plus. You actually have access to pretty much everything Star Wars now. But before then, people who would watch like the old shows, the old vintage cartoons, even certain holiday specials. one of Spencer's favorite.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So when we talked about the Star Wars holiday special, episode 198. So go check that out if you want to hear that again.
Yes, that was a very very interesting conversation. Grandpa's a very dirty bird, but still, it's one of those instances where as we grew up, as we are still growing up, these types of shows are a part of our upbringing. These are the shows that pretty much helped us get a better understanding, a better context of not only the ways of the Jedi, but the way of the Wills. We've seen the way of Rebels. We've seen how the Senate is run. We've seen Palpatine's rise to power. We've seen his second rise to power. We've had all these instances. And so I kind of want to talk about a little bit where we're coming at and where we've been and where we're going in terms of these shows, because in all honesty, right now is high time for the new direction and trajectory for Star Wars to kind of be charted out. And I feel like with someone at the helm like Dave Filoni, he's making a completely different, in my opinion, different universe than George Lucas created. And we're going to talk about that as well. So, but first things first, I want to know around the table, like, what are your familiarities with Star Wars? Let's go ahead and start with Spencer, because I figure you're going to want to, you know, run through that faster than anyone else.
Oh, yeah. So, like, the more you've talked in just this episode, the more I realize I know less and less than I feel like I realize I did. You
knock yourself before you even get a chance. Come on. I believe in you.
So, yeah. I started watching Star Wars with my dad in the theaters. So, you know, I saw the original trilogy at some point and then the next one at some point. And then for TV shows, kind of skip all the way down to The Mandalorian.
I feel like there's always see, that's the thing with fandoms nowadays. Like, people are very specific. Oh, if you don't know this, then you're not a true fan. The franchise started out as films. If you're a fan of the films, I mean, hey, by all means, be a fan of the films. You know, if that's where your fandom lies, if you're somebody who just watches the shows because you're kind of tired about hearing about Luke Skywalker, that's okay too. I mean, the fandom is made to be accessible by all. So, was that about it?
Yeah.
Okay. Amy, let's talk about where you're coming from and what you know.
I know stuff and things and stuff. But when it comes to, I've seen all the films. I was actually in theater when the prequel trilogy decided to come out. So I did midnight showings for all of those, which was awkward and hilarious and brilliant, because it was a great way to experience legacy fandom.
One second. Spencer, did you see the prequel trilogy in theaters?
Yeah.
So Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not old enough to see the original.
No.
I mean, I'm not saying that, but I mean, there have been reprisals of, I mean, even now we have the 40th anniversary of Return of the Jedi in theaters, right? Are coming out soon. So
now.
Oh, it's currently in the theaters.
Still, four more days, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. See? Ah. We're playing. So I watched the prequels. I remember being a little kid and actually watching droids and Ewoks on like CBS and ABC when they did reruns. Oddly enough, like on Saturdays, it might have been a Sacramento thing. I don't know. I also watched Caravan of Courage. Help me. I rented it from Blockbuster. Poor choice.
I mean, everybody has their vices.
But I'm fairly up to date. I am currently working through Clone Wars because that's a big ins. That's a
huge one.
That's a thick boy.
Yeah.
And it is a thick boy. Sorry, it is. You also have to machete that one because the first episode, yeah, it didn't. Okay. And then I haven't seen Andor, and I think that's the only one I of those. And I don't know if the Lego Star Wars stuff counts either.
I mean, a lot of those are just shorts. I mean, I'm talking about the games.
Oh, no. There's like
a bunch of little shows.
There's a little shorts. Shows yeah. and shorts of Lego Star Wars. So I don't know. There's a holiday special.
Yeah, there's the Lego holiday special.
So I don't know if that counted.
It either. Definitely can't replace the original.
Nothing can.
Nothing can. And I don't think anything should. Marcus, you being friend of the show, what are some of the things that make you the ultimate Star Wars fan that you are?
Ultimate, I don't know. But so I was about, let's see, 8 years old when I saw, I think the first one, episode 4 and episode 5. My dad took me to it was like a dollar theater. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Vacaville. It was like a dollar theater right across the street from my high school that I would eventually be going to. And I saw those and I was hooked like from that point on.
Yeah.
And then I think the prequel trilogy was coming out like that summer. That's when my dad had the impetus to show me the other ones.
Very smart man.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, and then we watched Return of the Jedi. He bought like the VHS where it was like, oh, you can only own this like one last time.
Yeah.
And went to Sam's Club, bought like the big VHS set. Yep. Yeah. That had like the faces on it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I have that one.
Yeah. We still have it. My parents still have it. It's almost destroyed. Like I've watched it so many times. Like the line runs across the screen now.
Yep.
So
no amount of tracking fix can do anything for that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where I'm coming from. And then, you know, as I got older, I think I was in college when like the Clone Wars came out. And so I actually did keep up with that and watch the Clone Wars like when they were like, on Cartoon Network. I think it was like the biggest, like one of the biggest TV dates like of all time. Like ratings wise, it was absolutely huge.
Absolutely.
And then I've just been keeping up with Disney Plus. I pretty much watched, I want to say everything, even Ewoks and Droids. I have the old VHSs at home.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and if anybody's listening and you're like, what the heck is that? They're actually on Disney Plus.
Everything's
so
available on
you,
Disney
you can
Plus.
Go
on yeah, you can watch all this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I grew up, so obviously no new information for this table, but I grew up in a family that just loved movies, and my dad was a huge Star Wars fan, so not only my dad, but the rest of his brothers and sisters as well. So I had cousins who had all the little toys, the little Kenner toys and all that, they would bring them. I had cousins who would bring them by the tub when they would come to visit because we would share and like, you know, compare different ones. Like, oh, my Luke's a little scuffed up. What is yours? Oh, I lost the head on this one, but blah, blah, blah. All the vehicles, all the stuff, even like when the newer edition, when the remastered versions of like Return of the Jedi came out, and they came out with all brand new toys during the late 90s. I had all those. I watched all the movies when I was young. Like my dad, much like how I like to do now, my dad liked to binge the movies and we would watch 4, 5, and 6. I remember the time when we found a copy, exactly what you're talking about, like the original trilogy in like with the faces. He had those and we watched them. And then when the prequels came out, my dad was one of the first gifts I remember him getting us of first night showings tickets. And so we went to go see it, and we actually saw The Phantom Menace a few times because he liked it. I liked it. We loved the idea of, you know, this is the birth of the big bad that we all know and ultimately love. And just being a Star Wars fan just was in my blood, I guess, to put it strangely. You know, my dad loved the movies. My mom loved the movies. And so every time a new movie would come out, we would all, as a family affair, go out. And as I grew older, coming to find things like even when the first Clone Wars by Jenda Tarkovsky came out on Cartoon Network, and then the new one for Disney Plus or Disney, and then Rebels, I had liked the series. I fell in love with the series when Rebels came out. And I absolutely love the idea of a story that builds upon itself during the course of, you know, between episode 3 and episode 4. And of course, just all the other movies and everything else that came up. Much like Amy, I haven't fully seen the whole series of Andor, but everything else, I'm completely caught up with Visions and everything else. So,
or Tales of the Jedi.
How dope was Visions?
Seriously. I'm so excited for the one that's coming out this year, too.
What is that? Chapter 2, or what is it called? Visions? Volume 2. Volume 2. Sorry.
Yeah, volume 2.
We mentioned Droids and Ewoks, those two series. So kind of where we've been, you sound like, Amy, you're most familiar with these series. So explain to our listeners, what was the series Droids about?
So Droids was following R2-D2 and C-3PO as they were transitioning. I believe it was between Return of the Jedi and New Hope. That doesn't sound right. No.
Empire?
Maybe. Because I remember it was like in a weird space, but it was supposed to be like, when you watched it, you didn't get the emphasis of the original trilogy. It was like, whoo-hoo-hoo, we're zany. Oh no, hijinks ensue. And you're like, 3PO, you would never do that. Never. R2, maybe. 3PO, no.
Which, oddly enough, both of those series aired at the same time simultaneously.
They were supposed to be like they, companion shows, yeah, almost. Yeah. They were like setting up for, you know, they were supposed to be between Empire and Return of the Jedi. Yeah, sorry, I said New Hope. But it was supposed to like build on itself and build on itself, mm-hmm, for droids. And then they did crossovers because I remember there were comic books too. Mm. And I saw some of those and I was like,
that's right. Oh. We didn't even talk about comic books.
No.
Oh, those.
That's another time.
Yeah, that's another time.
That is a complete other fandom that you can just dive into nonstop.
Yeah. Another media set, as it were. But yeah. I remember watching droids and I was like, this feels really uncomfortable.
I believe, isn't it Anthony Daniels does voice, yes, C-3PO in this one? Which I think you can earnest. I mean, honestly, Anthony Daniels has voiced every iteration of C-3PO.
And we love him, but this was a no-no.
I mean, maybe he was having fun.
As long as he had fun. Whenever we meet him, whomever meets him next, please ask him if he actually enjoyed droids.
It's interesting to hear kind of how, in the beginning, the aspect of taking something based in Star Wars, but not putting it in the midst of a Star Wars story, kind of seemed like how the way to go. Okay, if we're going to make this, we're just going to make this, have fun. We're not going to actually give it a specific direction. It's just, like you said, hijinks ensue.
Yeah.
It's like Rescue Rangers. There's no end or beginning for it. It's like just hijinks ensue and naked mice. So
hey, half naked mice.
Okay, Gadget had pants. Everyone else was naked.
They're chipmunks. They weren't.
Then why did Gadget?
Oh, no. I was just thinking Monterey Jack doesn't wear pants.
None of them do.
Gadget has wears a jumpsuit.
I just said that. Does nobody listen?
No, because it's usually mean.
Very true. What? That's my line. Yes.
Anyway.
HR is getting called.
So. Yes. Okay, so essentially, there's no rhyme or reason to their stories.
No, not for droids. I mean,
Ewoks, I'm assuming obviously it's within the framed universe. There's stormtroopers and Darth Vader and the dark side.
Yeah, and you're trying to evade the Empire and help the rebels. Like that's it's.
I can't remember. Yeah, I know I've seen it. I know we have it.
But because it's kind of like.
So how does that fare with the Ewoks?
Ewoks is a different beast.
Okay, so it sounds like there's a little bit more drive, a little bit more story. To be honest, I didn't
We're
watch.
We're following Wicket.
Yes, hey, that and is all true. Of his friends. So I'm not all that familiar with any of those classic shows.
No, sorry. I'm laughing because that was the one thing I remember when we finally did see Return of the Jedi. It was like Wicket, 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 Wicket. It's Wicket. First off, they all speak English. Congratulations.
They learned.
They learned.
America.
It's called basic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Please forgive me. Much like all high fantasies, basic.
Just like
common.
Every American who says you got to speak American.
Yes. But of, you know, all these galaxies.
So, okay, these Ewoks, what's going on here?
So, for the most part, you are following Wicket and his friends on varying adventures on Endor that end up where they are facing off against, like, a witch that's from another tribe.
There's a witch involved?
Yeah.
Or like a witch of Endor?
Well, they're another Ewok, or they're like another type of an Ewok. It's like, it's weird. It's
Amy
weird.
Keeps looking at Marcus.
I'm hoping.
I have a hard time remembering. I think I kind of. I'm getting visions of this, but it's not clicking. But
Marcus is like, I did not come on for this. I did not come
on for this. You're like intern. You're on your own.
You said this was Mandalorian, Spencer.
Yes, I was told that.
But so they go on these adventures. They're fighting off or trying to defend their home. They do come up against, I can't even remember, it's an M name, but there's another like Ewok witch that's on Endor that they're trying to go against. And it also starts to build, they try to build the bridge between the Ewoks, the droids, and then the Empire. Because if I remember, it ends with them establishing that the Empire has started to build their base on Endor. And they go and fight on a Star Destroyer in space, which is odd because it's Wicket, and he's got a pointy stick.
Morag the Tolga Witch.
Hey, it was a witch.
And their rival species, the Duloks. I'm just reading what it says here.
Well,
thank God for IMDb, but still.
But yeah, so I remember between that and then Caravan of Courage.
I vaguely remember Caravan of Courage.
Like there was technically two Ewok movies,
right,
that were supposed to be functioning as prequel and sequels or simultaneously. Mm-hmm.
To the cartoon or to the movies?
To the cartoon and to the movies. Like they were trying to make all these little bridges and it was just weird. And all I really remember is that blonde girl.
Yes! I don't remember much, but I remember a blonde girl.
This is coming back to me now.
Yes, it's all coming back to me
now. I feel like a lot of this was like really like ahead of its time before like studios were like, oh, let's make a whole universe. Like it was, I think it was really ahead of its time. Like a lot of these people, like I think they were visionaries, but they just didn't have like, they didn't have something to
they
it,
were
like,
on we drugs. Let's be honest. They were all just on drugs.
Well, I feel like probably in the problem case for this is that they lack the technology.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, you can watch this whenever you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I gotta stay up and watch this right now.
Right.
Well, who knows? It airs at 3 p.m. I can't see it for another week.
Yeah.
And if
I mean, how did we live back in the day? Literally, I was outside. We would literally wait for a Friday night movie on ABC. I was actually introducing Amy to, I don't know if you guys remember, side note about like the Friday night movies that they would do on ABC for like from Stephen King or whatever. Mm-hmm. Huh. Like one of my favorite
Storm of the Century.
Yeah, one of my favorite movies made for TV was Storm of the Century, mm-hmm. which was a 3-night event. Every Friday night, you would all grab the popcorn and show up at the TV and like, all right, you're watching this story happen, and then you're like, commercials, like, all right, go bathroom, go get popcorn or whatever, and then it's starting, hurry up, like, as screaming down the hall to get everybody coming back. Like,
and then if you had to go to the bathroom and you missed the chance to go to the bathroom, you better hold.
or you were missing that one part of the show that obviously no one was going to tell you about. So
I feel like the one bridge between that is like when Xfinity first started doing on demand, and before episode 3 came out, they had like all of the Star Wars on HBO. I remember that. And so like watched them all before I went to go see the midnight premiere. That was like, that was like the coolest thing I thought. Like I was like, oh, I can watch this like on the internet? Like what? Like,
yeah. Or like before even that, like when it was just on HBO, when they were doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they were going to be showing all three like on TNT mm-hmm. or USA. And you're like, all right, they're going to show all these movies. And I'm going to watch this movie at the end of the week. So you're like at 7 o'clock or it starts at 6. And if you miss even halfway through, you're like, crap. Okay, I got to wait till 11 to restart that cycle. And you're like, all right, 11 o'clock. And you're like, 11:05. Crap, I missed the opening. Times have changed. It's crazy.
We're not old now.
Hey, we're not that old.
But we're so old that the kids don't have to deal with it.
Hey, we're so old that I... Shoot.
Good job, Spence. You're just putting people next to
I literally cars. Described the line going across the TV on the VHS. I think that aged me right there.
I'm like, I They're have like, two versions of the VHSs for the original trilogy. The one where it had the faces, and then I have the CBS Fox one, which has the gates on it. And I'm like, I want to watch you on my VHS player, but this is scary. Yeah. I don't know how you're going to turn out.
I mean, and just another side note, like all the aforementioned like different variations of whatever version of you have that you have for Star Wars. If you have the one where they or George Lucas went and remastered A New Hope. And Greedo like shoots really fast, or if like you have the one where he doesn't shoot at all and Han actually just shoots first and only, or like there's all these different variations, and of course the rare and aforementioned gated version, which were the original versions of the
one
films.
Of the original versions. There's four, technically, now that I found out. There was a CBS, a CBS Fox, a Fox. Like, they all have their little branding.
Well, and then there's also the original version of A New Hope that's just titled Star Wars, which doesn't have the A New Hope title in it, which is very rare for anyone to find. So, but back to the conversation we're talking about. So, we know where Star Wars shows and so forth came from. Now, where they kind of jumped back into the forefront, it almost took a little over, 12 years. Oh, no, actually, I'm about 15, 18 years. Mm-hmm. Because then, as Marcus mentioned, we came at the forefront Star Wars Clone Wars, mm-hmm. which was just simply titled Clone Wars, not The Clone Wars. There's a big difference between Star Wars Clone Wars and Star Wars The Clone Wars. So Star Wars Clone Wars came out. It was created by the wonderful imaginative creator of Samurai Jack, mm-hmm. as well as several other cartoons. But most
Dexter's
people
Laboratory.
Dexter's Laboratory, Powerpuff Girls, Jenda Tarkovsky.
Redid Powerpuff? Really?
Well, that's kind of where a lot of people draw the...
Primal as well, right?
Yeah, Primal's another one. Primal. But because that's where a lot of people create that like theory that Samurai Jack is actually the professor from Powerpuff Girls.
Oh.
And it kind of it's weird.
I'll have to check that one.
So two different art styles, obviously. The newer one, which was done by Dave Filoni and his team, and a lot more CG is involved. It's 3D. The one on Cartoon Network by Jenda Tarkovsky is from 2003 to 2005, only had two seasons, in 2D animation. Then you have the new one that came out, which was in 2008 through 2014, and then came back in 2020 to do its last and final season, which was season
fifth and final. It's not seven. It's a lot of episodes.
Yeah. You introduced to the Bad Batch.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, that when we talk about the machete problem. I know, so
seventh season.
So I was, hey.
But it's interesting because they're two different art styles, but they're also two different directions of storytelling, two different types of storytelling. I don't know if you guys had ever heard the conspiracy theory behind these particular properties. So apparently, these two separate types of projects actually act as one telling the true story of what happened during that Clone War event, and one being
is a propaganda
portion. So people are saying that the Jenda Tarkovsky version is the actual telling of the real story, and then it was stopped. And it was reframed for the other one by Dave Filoni to act as the propaganda for the war type situation, which puts things in a different light for you.
That makes sense considering how every episode kind of starts out as like an old, like there's that guy like announcing like an old World War II propaganda
film.
His
here.
Which is one of the things, to be very honest, that put me off watching that Clone Wars for a very long time, was because the old-timey reporter or old-timey news voice drove me nuts. It drove me nuts in Legend of Korra. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I thought that was fine.
It works better there, but not in space, man. Not in space.
It gives a real, like...
the Duchess of Satine.
Yeah, it gives a real, like, with the Marines at Tarawa kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like every single movie you see of, like, little kids going to the theaters back in like the 40s, war is happening. Your boys on the front line are ultimately dying. Like stuff like that.
That's ultimately dying. I mean,
it's the truth.
Positive.
That makes so much more sense now. Like, wow, I did not know that. Okay, I see that now in a whole different light.
Yeah. Because of that, I rewatched a lot of when I first heard that theory. Yeah. I went back and rewatched all of the original 2003 ones, which you can't really find all that much. I don't know if they're on Disney Plus.
There's, I think, a season on Disney Plus.
Because there's two seasons altogether. But it would make sense if they're missing a season that gives you very important information.
Wink.
So the Clone Wars kind of gave us the backstory we're talking about, which actually Dave Filoni was an executive producer for that one, by the way, as well, for the Cartoon Network one. Mm-hmm. So power play? I don't know.
So you're saying that somebody went into the archives and deleted it?
and much like Stanley Kubrick in his Shining conspiracy theory, went into the new series and put something in there to kind of say, this didn't really happen, wink, wink. Amy's mind is getting blown.
No,
over.
I don't want to think about it now.
I have to rewatch these now.
Yeah. I think I'm only in season three of the newish-er Clone Wars, and I'm like, I can't handle this. And then it jumps all over the place too. And
well, I mean, if you look at oh my gosh. So you obviously know there are episodes in like the first three seasons that are out of order.
Oh yes. Yeah. The first episode of the first season is literally like, I remember. What was I doing? I was starting something, and I had questions, and I asked you because I wanted to learn about Rex and Cody. And you were like, oh, you need to watch this episode all the way for wherever. And then we get to the Brothers in Arms episode, and I watched all that one. And then when I actually started Clone Wars, I'm like, wait a minute. I
told her to see the episodes that actually explain their name, and then start with episode one.
And then I was just like, what the?
Yeah, there's guides online where you can see how you can watch it. I mean, it's kind of tedious, but it does make a lot more sense.
Much like Spencer the Machete Method.
Spencer's nodding for the. He goes, get to Mandalorian.
So Spencer, have you seen any of the Clone Wars series?
No, I was poor. I didn't have cable.
They had them on YouTube for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't realize all poor people back then had internet.
Who has what? I was poor.
Well,
technically,
apparently,
I still am.
Yeah,
Don't tell nobody. Technically, Spencer, we're both in the same boat.
No.
So yeah, I didn't see them really. Like, I was aware they were on because I saw cable when I went to my grandmother's house, and I was like, okay.
That's a thing.
So, okay, Star Wars cartoons.
So, all right. So essentially, the Clone Wars, the Dave Filoni series, kind of initiated, if you will, the jumpstart of creating other storylines, other threads outside of the Skywalker saga.
That were not pertaining to the books.
No. That's actually is very true, because Clone Wars wasn't really where they started pulling from Legends quite yet. It wasn't until they made the jump with Rebels. Mm-hmm. So jumping into currently where we are now, I mean, Rebels is the first and biggest thing that has ever happened since the Clone Wars series. Like I said, I liked the Clone Wars series. I absolutely loved the Rebels series for all that it did and all that it's continuing to do. I mean, I think it's a fair shake to say that because of Clone Wars, we have all of these newer storylines that are coming out in both animation and in live television.
Yeah, that's very true. I think for me, honestly, I think Rebels had to grow on me a little bit. But once I saw what they were doing, I thought it was really cool. And then obviously they pull from Legends with Thrawn.
Yeah.
And that just has huge implications all throughout everything. Because, you know, if you've ever read the books, you got the heir to the Empire, which they're currently, when we go in further, they're going to pull for that.
Absolutely.
And I was ecstatic when they brought Thrawn in. I was like, let's go. This is going to get so cool.
I mean, that whole, that was like, season three?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that whole introduction to bringing somebody like Thrawn into the forefront, first off, people had no clue who the heck he was.
Yeah, if you didn't read.
Exactly. If you didn't read any of the Legends books, any of the fanfic, like, honestly, everybody was like, who the heck is this Smurf? You know, what's going on? Like, this guy with the red eyes is showing up. And you, those people who understood knew exactly what the implications were. Thrawn is just the ultimate. If there's an ultimate evil within this universe, within this Star Wars universe, and you represent it as Darth Vader, you're not really getting the full picture of how evil the Sith can be, or the Empire ultimately as a whole.
Yeah, I think Thrawn definitely does where Darth Vader is like the dark wizard along with the Emperor. Thrawn is the dark bureaucrat and the thinker.
Master tactician.
Yeah, and who's always like thinking one step ahead, who's trying to get an angle on you. And he does this without, like, obviously using the Force. He's an intellectual.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Yeah. and all throughout the series, you're thinking, okay, Thrawn is giving space. He's giving space to see what they're... But then you come to find out he had always been five steps ahead of everyone else. He had always known all these different things. He had always recognized, you know, about like things that when they start talking about the Fulcrum story, when they start to, like, there are so many elements, whether if it's like the battle in Lothal, everything that has to do with Thrawn being at the forefront is just monumental and so indicative of how just smart and intelligent this particular villain is. And then to create the way they ended that series.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, with Ezra and with everything. I mean, I have to say, there have not been more moments in any kind of Star Wars, I guess, property that has made me emote more than watching some of these episodes in Rebels.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting goosebumps right now thinking about it. Like, you know, the sacrifices of your life, like Ezra, you know, sending out that final message. He's like, and always, he's like, may the Force be with you, and just takes off. And then, you know, Sabine have her whole monologue about everything afterwards. Yeah. Like, that gets really emotional really fast. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, at the end, you see Ahsoka, like, coming back to her, like, hey, it's not done. Like,
yeah.
And that kind of opened it up, I think, more so than Clone Wars. It opens it up because that was like the second show.
Yeah, it was barely the second show.
Barely the second show. And then, I think at that moment, I think a lot of people kind of realize, okay, I think I know what you're going to do now, because you're going to build on this universe. and this universe is going to get that much bigger. And like I said, with Thrawn and Ahsoka, it's just going to get just getting wild.
Yeah. And not to mention throughout the series itself, like there were so many emotional moments where you didn't really think that you could care about anything outside of what the main storyline has been for Star Wars. You think, okay, it's about the Skywalkers, it's about Luke, it's about this, it's about, you know, these, like the whole storyline with Zeb and his people.
Mm. Twin sons.
The twin sons. Oh my God. If ever there was an episode that was marked for infamy in just the beauty of everything you could encapsulate about Star Wars, it is the twin sons episode.
Yep. And also, can we give shout outs to Sam Witwer and coming back in as Darth Maul, which I cannot say enough about the deep, loving affection I have for the fanboy that he is.
Oh,
where
yeah.
everything for behind the scenes, he came in and he's like, there's an interview he was doing, and he was at a table read with Filoni, and someone was reading something, and he's like, well, that's not right. Because mm-hmm. this happened in the movies here and here and here.
Yes.
And Filoni took off his hat, and you're like, oh, it happened. Somebody knows. So, yeah, it's just, it's so, the team behind it and everybody involved in it has such a passion for the universe that it's like, we'll probably gush for like 45 minutes if we keep at it.
No, without a doubt. I mean, let alone if ever there was another episode that fully brought you to your essential needs. I think I even made a meme about it online about, like, you know, it was a meme like, oh, no Star Wars story is worth crying over. And then, you know, I mentioned Kanan and Jarrus, and then
shut up.
Like that episode, that final episode for Kanan and Jarrus is just, it's a work of art. It's beauty.
You know what's great about that episode is it's weird when you, the first time you watch it, I feel like, you know when people say, like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch it, you kind of, you don't want it to know, but you get this gut feeling, like, you know, like, okay, I think,
yeah,
I think I'm ready for this. And, like, you're not ready for it.
Nope.
And when he does it, and then his eyes come back, and I was like, bruh, like.
I'm just,
I know,
we're over here. Spencer's looking at Star Trek memes.
Hold on, I gotta blink a couple times. Hold on.
Yeah.
It's just you have to see it, Spence.
Yeah.
The Rebels series is one of those that you don't have to have prior knowledge of any other storyline.
You really don't. It's actually really nice
because everything that happens in it, if there's an appearance of anything or whatnot, like Bo-Katan reappears in this series as well as she does in Clone Wars. And that actually helps build kind of the foundation for her reappearance in The Mandalorian. But there's so much that happens within it that it's just such a rich storyline from beginning to end. And yeah, the first season is a little clunky just because they're trying to find their footing. But ultimately, Rebels is incredible.
It's beautiful. Hmm. Like, you really, there are Easter eggs that I'm finding watching Clone Wars that I saw in Rebels, and I'm like, oh. Okay, I'm here for this. And now that's nicely transitioning into the live action where I'm like,
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry.
Of course, after Rebels, another series that they tried to do in 2D animation was Resistance. It didn't have a lot of success. Basically, it was more about the fighter pilots, the X-Wing fighter pilots, and their ability to learn all the ropes and whatnot. Young people, young pilots, and so forth. Of course, after that, we dive into the first...
we're done with Resistance?
There's not a lot to it.
Not much to that.
Not much to it. There wasn't a lot that really brought it to the forefront of, like, conversation.
There wasn't a lot of Resistance. Oh. I'm here just to make Spencer laugh at least once.
Moving on.
That's my goal.
We do get to the 2019 debut of the most popular, probably, Star Wars show right now, and that is The Mandalorian.
Hey, I've heard of that one.
You've heard of that one?
Yes.
And you've seen it?
Yes.
Are you okay over there?
Nope. Never.
We didn't hire a Foley artist, did we? Just saying.
A Foley?
Foley? Foley?
Foley?
Foley.
Foley.
You said Foley.
So, Spencer, you've seen The Mandalorian.
Yes, I have seen The Mandalorian.
So which seasons have you seen?
All of them. Ha-ha!
Hey!
From zero to hero.
No time nice. Flat.
I have to say, when The Mandalorian was first starting out, I wasn't too sold on it. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't aware of like how it was going to go. The idea of it going outside of the realm of working in Jedi and the Force and stuff like that, there wasn't a lot going for it. I mean, take for instance, before that, I believe the Solo movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I don't think that did well.
Okay, so that's it. So since I've been quiet for so long and I had to skip all over this, this is actually my first Star Wars show that I was watching. Mm-hmm. And so like coming from the movie series, I was like, yeah, let's just try something new. I just need something that's as far away from the Skywalkers as humanly possible.
Okay.
And then we're like, we're finally in this Mandalorian. Sure, I don't know what that is. Let's go. Like, so I was like, I was actually like down to
like,
just
like, is he Hispanic? Is that his last name?
I was just like down to learn like something else about someone
Space
else.
Buttons. There you
go. Alejandro Mandalorian? Sorry.
No, nah, that's you.
So so what did you like about the series?
So going off first, like, you know, it was a bit slow start, but like, you know, like once they introduced that kid, I was like, yeah, I was kind of into that.
I mean, the whole idea of bringing Werner Herzog into the fray was a little interesting. Because he's a really kind of independent director. The guy who's, yeah, does that voice that Amy just says, I want to see the baby. He's an actual, like, he's a very weird, he's a very weird director. But for some reason,
he wanted to be in the Star Wars universe.
He does random cameos in certain shows. Like, he did a cameo in Parks and Rec as a homeowner who was going to sell or rent out a house to Chris Pratt and Aubrey Plaza's character, and he's really weird in that scene too.
Wasn't he also on Rick and Morty? Wasn't he Shrimply Pibbles?
He was Shrimply Pibbles.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes.
So the man has done really odd things, and he makes really weird movies. So to see him in The Mandalorian was kind of a little scary.
Yeah.
But needless to say, like it did hold up that first season. Like honestly, that first season sold it for everyone with, at the time, Baby Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, you know, Pedro Pascal as an incredible Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then reintroducing the facets of the Mandalorian clan and what they stand for, what the old ways were compared to the newer ways that people are used to when seeing Rebels or that are reminded of when they saw Clone Wars mm-hmm. with like Duchess Satine and the way of Mandalore back then. I know, Spencer, but
yes, yes. This is the way.
This is the way.
Yeah.
What was your take, Marcus, on the Mandalorian show?
So originally, I was going to be a hater when like they first like, because I was like, I just want to hear about you know, I feel like I'm kind of like a child in that way. Like, I just want to hear about like Jedi's and like
lightsaber
fights. And I was like, what is this going to be? And then that first episode comes on. And I'm a big fan of Westerns,
mm-hmm.
and when they pull their inspiration from like Clint Eastwood movies and stuff. I was hooked after that because it was like, I was like, oh, this is a space Western. I'm totally in there.
Yep.
And you know, when he's like, I can bring you in warm or I can bring you in cold, just shows his gun.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, now you got me. Or, you know, it's a space cowboy fighting fascist. I mean, what better than that? And then obviously you go on and then you do get your lightsabers, you do get your force powers, but it's all in this like contained little story about how he's just trying to make his way in the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's really cool. And I think this last season, it's not that I didn't like it, but it kind of got away from, I kind of liked the almost like vignettes of like, oh, let's just take a bounty and do this. I kind of liked that. And I hope they go back to that. There can be an overall bigger story at like the end, but I feel like I need some of those episodes where it's just like, let's just do bounty hunting.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was really cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting because you take a look at what made the original trilogy so popular and so famous and so, you know, beloved. And it's all about relationships. It's all about the dynamic between those particular characters and how well they work together. And since then, it hasn't been so much of that. Like, you look at the obviously the prequel trilogy, you know that there's going to be broken relationship at the end of that, and that's kind of what you're expecting to happen.
Yeah.
The sequel trilogy, you were trying to see if they were trying to make it, but it never really mm-hmm. got to that level. And then you come to like The Mandalorian, and you recognize that the focus, the central idea behind this clan is family. It's relationships. Mm-hmm. It's the community. It's the dynamic between father and son, friend and friend, Mandalorian and Grogu. Like, yeah. They're back at that kind of center nucleus of mm-hmm. the universe itself, that it's based on relationships. It's based on caring about each other and not just existing in this wide universe. And that is, I think that is at the heart of it, why a lot of people are flocking to this series and making it part of their, like, complete Star Wars fandom filmography. You know, what did you think, Ames?
So initially, I've always been somebody that when there's a fandom and I can learn more things and they're random and obscure, I'm for it. Like, I want to know about blurgs. Like, I didn't, again, by this point, I had seen The Mandalorian before I seen Clone Wars when the blurg showed up. And I was like, okay. But that was something.
For those people who don't know what a blurg is,
it looks like a tadpole with legs that runs and goes, nah. Okay. Tell me I'm wrong.
That's okay. Yeah, there you go.
It's Nick, yeah. Nick Nolte, right?
That's what he writes.
What was that race?
Nick Nolte?
They just reintroduced him in the third season too, when they talked about him and they sat him down.
Ugnaughts.
I had seen Ugnaughts in the Clone Wars, and I had seen Ugnaughts in like Rebels. Mm-hmm. And never really thought twice, because there's an Ugnaught that's always with what's his name?
Hondo.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's just his friend.
I'm used to just the squeals and all that kind of stuff.
Aren't they in Empire Strikes Back? They're working on the
the machine that they're working on.
The carbonite.
That's right.
The carbonite machine.
They're on
in the bottom.
Fridge. Yeah.
Because they were like slaves, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The Empire enslaved them. Yeah.
And so it's right. Like to have someone as verbose as the Ugnaught in that first season, and to make us love him as much as we did.
Yeah.
It's like,
I love this little pig.
I have spoken.
No, you got to do it in the Nick Nolte. I have spoken. The whole like smoked about 12 packs before he went into the recording with
rode the great mythosaur.
Yes. it's such a rich storyline where the Mandalorian, backed by Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, mm-hmm. is also trying to take efforts to expand the universe as well. I mean, we got opportunities to see Ahsoka as an adult in this particular series.
Looks great.
Well, Rosario Dawson. I mean,
but that's also the presence of Ahsoka.
What's the name of that episode? The Jedi?
Yeah.
I think it's called The Jedi, and it's like Shogun Assassin. Like,
exactly.
Yes. Like I was like, okay, we're pulling from like my two favorite things to do with Westerns and Samurai and putting it together.
Yeah. Just waiting for that. Boom.
Yeah.
Bow, 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 bow.
Like when she's standing there and it's and I was like, let's go, just in the street. Yeah.
Which she is actually that particular actress, she's the daughter of Dan Inosanto. Mm. If you don't know who Dan Inosanto is the other nunchuck wielder in Game of Death,
mm-hmm.
in that when he's fighting his way up to get to the boss.
It's the woman with the Beskar spear.
That's the daughter. Dan Inosanto and Bruce Lee were actually really great friends. And so as friendship goes, he put him in that movie. But she also knew Bruce Lee. She studied under her father. It just made sense. And it's like having her in this universe is like money.
Yeah.
So... there's so much that comes out of this, and then obviously with the reoccurrence of Ahsoka in this series, you're like, oh my god, hold up, where's Ezra? Where's, like, all these questions start coming up as a fan of Rebels, mm-hmm. because of the way that ends. And like I said, Rebels kind of is like the starting pot for every storyline that's mm-hmm. to come and every storyline that we want to see. And it's just
when she says that line, she goes, "Where's Thrawn?" And I lost it.
Because there's so much to speculate. Like, you're like, okay, wait, wasn't he with? What is saying? And you're like, okay, so it opens up kind of like you were saying, all new storylines mm-hmm. to this whole franchise. And yeah, Dave Filoni has been doing incredible work with that particular series. And with this particular universe, like I honestly feel like there is such a difference between this universe and what we've seen prior to, with even if we're looking at the prequel trilogy. George Lucas has made every effort to build out this universe that he has started, but in actuality, I feel like he's barely hit the surface of a lot of it, because Dave Filoni is the one who's digging deep for gold out of a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
No, I agree with you. I mean, you watch the episode 4, and when Governor Tarkin talks about the Imperial Senate will no longer be of concern to any of them, that's like surface level. And even as a kid, I was like, wait, what's this whole, there's like a Senate? Like, what's going on here? And you just, you kind of, it's in the background. But then you see things like Andor and Mandalorian, you start to realize this is a lived-in world.
Yep.
And I think Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau are really doing a great job by making that world alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Obviously, after the release of Mandalorian, we got The Bad Batch that came out in 2021, which if you're a fan of the Clone Wars, you know exactly who The Bad Batch is. Marcus, why don't you explain a little bit of about The Bad Batch?
The Bad Batch is a group of soldiers who are a bad batch. They are unique clones or a unique fighting unit that have to supplement like different kinds of operations throughout the Empire, and then eventually they... one of them goes with the Empire, and the other four and then end up fighting against the Empire and doing odd jobs just trying to make their way in the galaxy. It's a really good show, and I really do hope Tech actually didn't fall.
Yeah, with that last episode. Yeah. But The Bad Batch is also another love letter to everything the Clone Wars has done. And then going back to like with Rebels, where we get opportunities to revisit with Rex. Mm-hmm. And who were the other two, Amy?
Was it Cody on the big weird thing?
There's Rex and Cody, and Cody is like...
In Rebels, when they found them on the big, like, walkie thing, because you had...
Rex, Cody, and then what's the crazy one?
The crazy guy.
It wasn't Fives, was it? No,
it wasn't Fives.
It wasn't Fives.
It wasn't Heavy.
It wasn't, like, Oddball or something.
It might have been, like, Oddball or something.
Something like that.
Something weird, because he was nuts.
Yeah.
But he was fun.
They're on the old walker.
Yeah. And they just keep moving. Like, I'm like... And that's another one, like... These series have continued to take bits and pieces from other places.
From each other.
And then I think that's what helps tie in, like, getting vibes from particular actors that have reoccurring things. Mm-hmm. Like, for this season of Mandalorian, we got to see the, and I can't even pronounce their names, but Babu Frick's people.
Oh, yes.
Which... I was like, okay, they're adorable and they're ridiculous, and apparently they settled here. I'm here for this because I didn't like. Let's be honest, Solo was not my jam. That was the best part out of Solo. But being able to pull them in and then being able to kind of cherry pick where we start seeing from Mandalorian when we get into Book of Boba, and something that happened right in the middle of that where we're just like. There's just a lot of this with my hands and screaming, and
much like Clone Wars, like Bad Batch is just a lot of great vignettes of dirt of situations that are happening with this particular group.
Yeah,
and it's they're all great stories.
Yes,
they're all really fulfilling, and the way the direction goes, you're rooting for this team, and you find yourself in love with these five clone troopers. Who are it's a unique story storyline and unique way of storytelling. After The Bad Batch, we get Visions, which was
absolutely brilliant.
So, Spencer, did you see Visions?
No, I forgot about it.
Okay, so Visions is essentially
you'll have to remember about it.
Yeah, because they're not. It's not like a series or anything. They're like little vignettes of different types of directors. Yeah, it's an anthological type series, but. Some of it are kind of looking like anime. Some of them are like old school Japanese, like Shogun era type things with Jedi, which speaking to Marcus's heart there.
Yeah. It's one of those things I'm just like, this is just like a universe that's like ripe for that. Like when they finally did it, I was like, why did it take so long for this to happen?
Well, and I'm pretty sure there's a fanfic book out there that may have touched on it. Yeah. But it's like now that it's becoming more and more of like instead of the shunning ground, it's the pulling ground.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I love the fact that Dave Filoni is not afraid to look at what already has been established in other people's vision of the universe and making it part of canon. Like that's one of the unique things about Dave Filoni that I really have to say is... It's admirable in the effort of him not gatekeeping or keeping away the storyline to where it's only like him and he can only be the one to like direct it. Like he's pulling,
not hogging it. He's not hogging the universe.
No, absolutely.
What's the episode that my favorite episode of the Visions was? The one where they all get dragged to that like space station and they're trying to guess who's the bad guy, and they're all the bad guys except for one of them.
Yeah.
It's called like the Sith or something. I can't remember.
It's what something.
Yeah.
And yeah, my favorite was the one where it was the. I almost said the lop. She's like the bunny rabbit, and she's the sisters, which mm-hmm. that was unexpected too. Yeah. Like, there's just a lot, and Vision's.
the second volume.
I'm so excited. So about.
Interestingly enough, Spencer, the creative team behind Wallace and Gromit are given Aardman, one of the episodes.
Aardman has a
and it looks really fun.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and then I'm also excited because one of my favorite animation houses, which is the team in the studio in Ireland who did Secret of the Kells, Song of the mm-hmm. Sea, Wolfwalkers has one too, and I'm like, yes.
And the art style in that one looks really good.
This is their art style.
Yeah, I think it's a fun playground for Star Wars.
Absolutely.
It's definitely a fun playground.
Not to mention, it gives people who have wanted to be a part of the Star Wars universe in some form or fashion, whether it's through vocal acting or even through art styles, directing styles, it gives them an opportunity not to take on the whole elephant, mm-hmm. but to just take one bite and be able to present that as, you know, their portion to the Star Wars universe. Now, mind you, none of it is canon. It's just vignettes. But it's still an effort to show their love and mm-hmm. affection for the franchise.
Yeah.
And mind you, you watch the first season, and to be quite frank, you won't be able to stop. Like, once you start the first episode, you'll have to see all of them.
You have to go straight through, yep.
So, but visions aside, out of The Mandalorian, we also got the birth of the next series that came out, which was The Book of Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
Which we got to see Ming-Na Wen as what is her character's name?
Fennec Shand.
Where she shows up in the second season for The Mandalorian. We get Boba Fett played by the original Jango Fett. What is his name? Temuera Morrison.
Yay.
Which the fact that he's still a part of this universe almost 23 years later after his first introduction in the original or the prequel trilogy is mind-boggling, because not to say that he can't do it, but the fact that he's still willing to do it and he's gung-ho about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to admit, after watching that series, he's still pretty active. Like, his mm-hmm. He looks in shape.
Yeah.
So needless to say, he definitely looks like he's somebody in shape. Did you see that series?
Yes.
Okay. There's only one... One season. There was only the one season.
The one, yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah, it's a couple of episodes of The Book of Boba Fett and then part of the Mandalorian new stuff.
Yes.
Yep.
We talked about that.
Yeah, we did briefly outside, and I was like, this is weird.
Yeah. Then we got Mandalorian 2.5.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, exactly.
And you have to watch it. Well, you should watch it so you know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, interesting.
Yeah.
But
no, it's very true. It's like, it's Book of Mandalorian.
But I think also that was like the breath that they needed, because everyone was like, to be very honest, of the live action that we've seen so far, it was a little rough. Like, it wasn't bad, but it was rough, and people started kind of. Marcus is going.
Like, just what was with those kids on the bikes?
I don't know. I mean, everybody's getting moted.
The modifiers, or what were they called? The mods.
Yeah. And then like that one kid does the unnecessary like
turn and spin. Shoot. And
oh yeah.
it was the Michael Bay Bad Boys turn and shoot kind of thing.
Like, that turn and shoot looks like I gotta make this my career move.
Oh heck yeah. He's like, I'm not getting anywhere else. I got to make this look
they're
good.
They're on bikes. They ride together. They die together. Mods for life.
There you go. Watch the next season comes out and someone's going to have a tattoo of that in like whatever, a tease or something.
Oh my gosh. I think it was really necessary to have the breakup though with Mando, because it reinvigorated people. It got them super excited for not only the next episode, the next season of Mandalorian, but also to complete Boba Fett, because they're like, if he showed up here.
I thought what's cool about these Star Wars too is that you got like in the Book of Boba Fett, you got a real cool API influence mm-hmm. with Boba, the actor, bringing in some of like those cool cool weapons from like the islands. Like, that's really cool. And then, like, fun fact is, Ming-Na Wen, she does the Disney hat trick. She was in S.H.I.E.L.D., she was a Disney princess, and then she's in Star Wars.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so, yeah. And yeah. She, yeah, totally cool, like, and a great character too. So you got like a lot of API representation there.
Who was the studio that brought us Street Fighter? Because if it was so Fox,
oh, she
then there's a fourth.
Yeah.
No, and Ming-Na Wen is one of those kind of like really cool outliers in terms of performers who is still very much like she's the Michelle Yao mm-hmm. of this day and age, mm-hmm. seeing all that she's doing and still being more than capable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's just a powerhouse for that particular series and that universe. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think for that, going back to that Mandalorian 2.5, I think that the effects team had to redeem themselves after the last time they left us with the way Luke looked in the second season of The Mandalorian. They're like, we can do better. We can do better. I swear. Yeah. We can do better.
Okay, but like, did they do a lot better?
They did a lot better than what that other one looked like.
So. I don't know. Sometimes, like, Luke looked like he was just a cutout, like, in this season. Like, in Boba Fett. Not talking about season two. He looked super bad there. But and here, I was like, no, you've not sold me on this. Like, you need to, like, go back just to recasting younger people.
How cool was that scene, though, when Luke Skywalker came back and you see, like, you know, Jedi's aren't really supposed to inspire fear, but you see fear in the eyes. Because, a Jedi at this point in the universe is somebody that, like, even during the Clone Wars, like, you rarely hear of a Jedi.
Warriors of peace and all this. Yeah.
And they're, like, legends now in the canon now when it's past the Return of the Jedi. Like, you're like, Luke Skywalker, like, who's that? Like,
yeah.
And then he shows up, and the only person in that room who really knows what's going on is the Imperial officers. Like,
yeah. And they're like, oh, shoot.
Yeah. And then he just comes in super calmly, and you realize this isn't Luke, like, just any Jedi Knight. This is, like, Master Jedi now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was you're right. It was one of those moments where, I mean, I believe everybody on YouTube reacted to that last scene mm-hmm. and went nuts as soon as that, you know, door opened, or as soon as that lightsaber made it through the door, and you're like, who is this? And everyone's getting excited. Even everybody was kind of like making theories and making thoughts and you know, hopeful guesses that, you know, oh, when Grogu is on that mountain and the force starts moving through him and it makes that kind of signal, and you're like, who's he gonna call? Who's gonna answer that call? What's gonna happen? You know,
the Jedi signal. It's not the bad signal. It's as close as we can get, but those ears.
It's the Luke signal.
It's the Luke.
Yeah.
No, don't do the Amberu. You were about to do the Amberu.
Yes, I was. I also think, like, really quick to track back for Boba, I appreciated that Amy Sedaris came back through just as ridiculous as she always is. As is she not Pele? Pella?
Pella or something.
Yeah, I think that's her name.
She's so ridiculous, but I love that it's the universe as big as it's becoming. It's still got those random, it's still got Carl Weathers hanging out.
I mean, can you put it on your that year's bingo card to see Danny Trejo as a Rancor trainer?
Oh, yeah.
Like seriously, yeah. Danny Trejo, the machete, like coming in like, well, you gotta look it in its eyes when it imprints. It's like, this is Danny Trejo. You cut people's arms off with a big old machete. That doesn't make any sense.
And now he trains Rancors.
I mean, it's so cool to see, like, just space Latinos. Like, right? I love it.
When Pedro Pascal took off his helmet, I was like, oh my God, there's other Mexicans. Like, it's okay. Like, not many Latinos in space, just saying.
Yeah.
But, and the one black man that was in space for a long while, Lando. Oh,
yeah. Lando.
And then now there's two.
Yeah. So, we're up there now, two. That's 100% increase.
Hey, can't go wrong with that. But also, like, one of the good things that the Book of Boba did was introduce, like, the live action variation of, like, local politics, even mm-hmm. like with the Hutts coming in and bargaining,
the twins
talking about Danny Trejo and all that, like them coming in mm-hmm. and us only seeing those guys in, like, the Clone Wars,
mm-hmm.
not really seeing them in live action, and then seeing it that way, it was such a unique opportunity. Plus, with everything that we have grown to know about the Sand People,
the Tusken Raiders,
for Book of Boba to create that beautiful vignette what their people is like, and mm-hmm. they're just another kind of tribe.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really important for the overall storyline, to kind of not create, like, this is the bad and this is the good.
Yes.
Because lines in the sand are getting slowly erased because we've seen Sith lords who have changed and become other things. We have seen, like, going back to Rebels, the whole loss of the Grand Inquisitor, and then Ezra has that that moment in the Jedi Temple where he is actually being trained for a moment by the Grand Inquisitor as a Jedi guard, a temple guard.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is what he was. And it's like, you recognize all those parts of it and you're like, okay, so it's not just cut and dry like that.
Yeah. I think the shows do a great, they have a great way of like making you have compassion towards everybody. And isn't that like, kind of like the whole story is you're trying to have compassion for everybody. Cause like, you know, if we're revolving around the ways of the Force and being good and being a good person in this universe, like I think they're really trying to tug at your heartstrings a lot of the time. Good storytelling.
Yeah. Because I think if there's one thing that the Revenge of the Sith and then Clone Wars as well as Rebels has taught us is that not everybody who said they were good were actually good.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with, Tales of the Jedi.
Yeah,
I'm kind of jumping
sequence,
a bit, but like,
sequence,
I mean, they can say
that
though.
And we're all on the same page. We're like that. Sequence, like
Tales of the Jedi was a perfect example of kind of recognizing that the lines were not black and white; they were gray to the fullest.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Tales of the Jedi is just a great series that really gave us an opportunity to see that.
Yeah.
Especially if ever there was an opportunity to honor everything that Sir Christopher Lee had done for the character of Count Dooku, it was this.
Yeah.
You know, Tales of the Jedi really gave the backstory as to what he essentially was driven towards.
Yeah.
I love that series. And I love the fact that we are now getting to see heroes even within the smallest parts, which, oddly enough, I hate to do a callback, but that is kind of what Rian Johnson did with The Last Jedi. I'm just saying. I kind of liked it. Either way. But yeah, like in between Book of Boba and Tales of the Jedi, we had Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is essentially just going to be that singular series. I don't think they're going to build on that anymore.
Well, and even in that, let's address that we brought back not only Ewan McGregor, which we're
Hayden Christensen,
and the fact that the conversations, because of the fallout that Hayden Christensen had, he did not want to touch another Star Wars thing in a million years. And then everything, for all the behind the scenes stuff that he and Ewan sat down and binged all of Clone Wars, they watched everything so he could understand where his character came from. And he was so appreciative of everything that Filoni had done to round out his character that when he came back, not only did he like savor it, but it was like a homecoming. And he said like it was when they first, like the first scene that he shot, Ewan had already wrapped for the day, and he came out and he ran at him, and I was just like,
and like you said, Dave Filoni has created such a beautiful just build up for each of these characters. I mean, if we're taking a look at monumental episodes throughout all of these, I mean, the episode where Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Ahsoka end outside of space and time and actually in the balance of where the Force lives. And that whole storyline, it's just...
La, 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 la. I've seen half of it.
Oh, my God. Those...
Everything about that episode is just
Easter eggs galore. If you see that painting in Rebels, and if you look really closely, you'll see somebody else too in there.
Yep,
and it's nothing's on accident in film.
Nothing's on accident.
Yeah,
no, yeah. Without a doubt. And that's one of the beautiful things that Filoni does is he's building out the universe not just for the heroes and the villains, but he's building out the universe for everyone to have a place to stand in the sun. Yeah. And that goes with like going back to Obi-Wan, even giving a pretty much dark side to Obi-Wan's journey of him not being able to connect with Qui-Gon, not being able to communicate. It's been at least 7 years, I believe it is.
7 or 8, yeah.
And it's like he hasn't been able to do any of that. And all this time we thought, oh, they've been communing, they've been having, you know, lunch together, blah, blah, blah. It's like he hasn't been able to do anything. Mm-hmm. And you get this intense storyline where we actually have a moment where Obi-Wan and Leia connect.
Mm-hmm.
Which is some of my favorite. Let's be very honest. That little girl was like Carrie Fisher incarnate. And I was like, thank you.
Those were some great moments where you know, she's kind of asking about who he reminds her of. He doesn't want to say, but he's just like, you know, she was like, oh, is she a Jedi too? And he's all, no, she was a leader and she was a good friend.
Yeah.
And you see, like, you really do see when you watch that and then you watch episode 4, you really do see how Ewan McGregor plays off of Sir Alec Guinness's character. Mm-hmm. And they're almost, you know, they're getting to be one and the same. They're getting to be around the same age now. And you see that there's pain there, that he definitely is going through serious moments of PTSD and possibly regret.
Yeah.
And even that last fight where he just apologizes to Anakin, he's like, I'm sorry for all of it.
Yeah.
And he realizes then that he's not talking to Anakin at all. He's not there. Your friend's not there.
Yeah.
He's been consumed. And he realizes that, and he kind of just, I guess at that point, he kind of just feels sorry for him. And I think that's the great thing that Star Wars does with bad guys, if you really watch it, it just makes you feel sorry for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It gives you a humanistic approach to some of these characters that have been just pigeonholed as either villain. Like, take for instance,
Cad Bane's the only one I'm like,
but like, take for instance, we were just talking about the Twin Suns episode on Rebels, Darth Maul's story, and that
spoiler,
that
if you haven't watched final this.
Ending, that beautiful like ballet of a fight that happens in a split second. Exact. Do you know how many videos I've seen that have dissected all the stances? Even Sam Witwer has gone like in detail about, like, Sam Witwer, Freddie Prinze Jr., who's apparently a huge Star Wars.
Yes.
You know, he's a massive Star Wars nerd, have gone into great detail to break down every single bit of that stance. And those final words, you know, about where Darth Maul's, like, mindset is, like, the recognition that we are all just casualties of war.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's what these two are. And as he holds them in his arms and he's like, you know, is he the one? He goes, yes. He goes, he will avenge us. And he dies. And it's like, no. You find yourself in that moment just wanting to just see a little bit more shine out of this character who has been nothing to a certain extent but manipulative and evil, and you're like, well, why has he been? And Dave Filoni is the man who's like, well, let me show you. And he goes into this whole deep dive from, you know, being tossed down a well, having spider legs, getting betrayed by the Emperor, all these different things that happen. And it's like, this man has gone through pain after pain after pain, and that's how he lives.
You see that with Dooku's story too.
So that broke my heart in Tales, so bad.
In Tales, you see that with Dooku's story. And I think when you watch that last scene with Christopher Lee where Anakin and him fighting, he goes, kill him now. And Dooku kind of looks shocked. You do see in that moment that Dooku just realizes he's been played the whole time. He realizes right there, everything I did wasn't for me at all. It wasn't.
Yes.
Yep. It was for him. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting played right now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, and then when he finds out about Qui-Gon too, and I was just
and he goes, that went too far.
Oh yeah, and I was just like seeing that build up initially too, which was so brilliant. Tales gives you such space to kind of, it's not even a peek behind the curtain, but it is essentially just an expansion of what you already know, and it's such a breath of fresh air, and.
Well, and it's the other side, not to interrupt, but it's the other side of that diamond.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we've spent so much time on this one side of this face for this diamond of what this character is, that turning it around gives us a complete different perspective and gives us sympathy. Whereas people who saw, you know, episode 2 or episode 3 and were like, oh, he finally killed that bad guy. Okay, great, whatever. And then you see Tales of the Jedi and you're like, oh my God, he killed Count Dooku. It's like, no.
Yeah.
And you're like, your just countenance changes immediately. Your feelings are like, but he had the curved blades. And he was like,
they do the great thing of I call it, like, in Game of Thrones, they Jaime Lannistered him. They took somebody that you don't like initially and they twist it and contort it to where you're like, I just feel bad for you now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was actually hoping you would get out of those now in this iteration and just come back and fight back for whatever you have.
That, and then I think the other one that really just kind of broke my heart for Tales was the practice round. The practice round with Ahsoka. And I was like, there was no way he did not know. He knew, like, all that time he knew. And he's like, if I can only help one, this is the one I choose. And then when you pop that back over to Rebels, you're like,
walking out.
So I mean, much.
All is the Force wills it in this universe.
Yeah.
Like, that's like the through line. That's why, like, Obi-Wan can never kill Anakin or Darth Vader, because he knew that he knew there was still good in him somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, that scene in episode 4 where he puts up the lightsaber and he's like, you know what, man? Like, we've done this twice. Like, I know I'm better than you, but I'm not going to fight you. Your son's going to have to save you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that brings us to the most recent series, which is Andor. Which
I have not seen, but I've heard great things about.
So Marcus, why don't you give us the 411 on Andor?
So Andor is about, at the time he's a criminal, Cassian Andor, and it takes place before Rogue One, and it's about his journey into not only being a smuggler or a criminal, but being somebody that can actually help the galaxy and help himself along the way. And it's a great spy political thriller that takes place in this Star Wars universe. That is something unique that we have not seen yet.
Yeah, because like we said, a lot of it has been based around, you know, the Force, the Jedi's, the Sith. Having something that removes itself, much like how The Mandalorian did at the first part of that season, of that first season, it really does give you the other, or even just Rogue One itself. You know, yes, you had like Guardians of the Wills, like with, you know, Chirrut and what is that other guy's name? The other guy with the massive guns.
Oh, yeah.
Or I think it's just Chirrut who's the guardian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chirrut's the guardian. The other guy with the big guns.
He's just a friend.
My brain keeps going, he's heavy. But I'm like, that's not heavy. Yeah. That's not heavy. But yeah, he's like his backup. Which you're like, everything's just Chirrut. Let's just be honest. He doesn't need any of us.
But in this framework, we have a storyline that's not based in, you know, needing supernatural powers to get the job done. And that's one of the beautiful things about stories like that, because then you're giving other views of outside of the universe, much like how Resistance, unfortunately without success, tried to do in terms of, you know, fighter pilots and so forth.
Yeah.
This one, Andor, is more of, like you said, a spy thriller within the political arena of what's going on, because it also includes like people like Mon Mothma. Mm-hmm. You know, you have certain key figures that, you know, are in the Senate.
Yeah.
And it's playing on the specific things that are happening behind the scenes, which we get a chance to see more so in the latest season for The Mandalorian, with a lot of the way things are happening in the background with the New Republic and so forth. Yeah. So,
I mean, you guys haven't seen all of it, so
no.
I don't want to
say. No, go ahead.
So, not really a spoiler, because you've probably seen it already, but Stellan Skarsgård's monologue towards the end of it, I don't know if you've seen it online, but he basically gives this kind of manifesto monologue of, like, what it is to essentially fight fascism in, and let's face it, the Empire is full of fascists, to fight a regime that you don't know if you're going to see the sunrise when this ends. And he probably knows he's not going to see it, but he talks about, you know, he's fighting for a future he's not going to see. He uses the tools of his enemies. He's a hypocrite. He uses anything against them just to get an edge. And it's a really beautiful moment, because he's trying to convince this other guy, like, look, man, like, because this guy's like, I have a family, like, I can't do this. He's like, look, man, if you don't stop this, like, they're going to come for all of us.
Yeah.
And then there's not going to be anything left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's one of those ones that honestly gets talked about constantly. It's one of the more popular ones that are coming out more and more, of talking about, like, the speech and talking about the whole premise of it and how, what it's based in. So it is one of those ones that's on my list to fully see finally. But that also brings us to talking about the future, where the future of Star Wars shows and so forth are going, which we have mentioned in detail with the release of Ahsoka coming out actually June of this year.
Yes.
It is dropping, and like we mentioned with certain things that have been hinted at, obviously there are story arcs that need to be resolved. Mm-hmm. And with the trailer, which Spencer, I believe you saw the trailer to Ahsoka.
Yes.
What did you think?
Oh, it looks good.
What look?
Hey.
So there's this blue guy, and
I need more chopper.
The Return of the King.
Return of the King. All hail.
It's an interesting jump into Star Wars storyline, because now we are being forced to face all the things that we were left with at the end of Rebels, what we saw in The Mandalorian.
Which they also start the trailer with the end shot from Rebels as the start of the Ahsoka trailer. And I was just like, no, I'm not ready.
Yeah, which is that mural on the wall of all of them.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Because I was thinking of the shot with the ships going over the tower with Sabine looking out when she's on Lothal.
Well, that too. One of the things that I'm actually interested in seeing is how they're going to introduce, because we got a chance to see Zeb in the last season of The Mandalorian.
I lost my marbles. Yes. I saw him in the background and I started flailing.
It's that meme of Leonardo.
Yeah. one, which you had Steve Bloom come back and voice Zeb for this one, which perfect. Who was the original voice. So you know who Steve Bloom is, the guy who did the voice for Wolverine. Well, he's the guy who did the voice for Spike in Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, because like he started talking, and I'm like, well, that's Spike.
Yeah.
So like you must matter.
And he's the original voice of Zeb in the Rebel series.
Okay. So
yes, he does matter. Does matter.
But we're going to get a lot of answers, a lot of our questions answered in this, hopefully within the first few episodes, because honestly, if I have to wait, I'm going to get sick.
Yeah, we got, Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
As Hera Syndulla.
Hera Syndulla.
Yeah. We got our guy who's going to play Ezra. Everybody's pretty much been announced as casting. And are you okay up there?
No, I'm not okay, because legitimately, when they announced this at Star Wars Celebration, I was already frothing at the mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And then everything else has just been like teases. So if I stare too long at it, I will literally burst into flame. So I'm just like, I watched the trailer like twice for Ahsoka, and I'm like, okay, I can't watch it anymore, because if I do, I'm literally going to start having panic attacks.
It shows on IMDb that Hayden Christensen's coming back for it too. Are they doing flashbacks?
They probably, I've heard the rumor, but I...
Well, I mean, because you do recall, like, there are certain scenes in the series, like at the Sith Temple.
Yes, okay.
So they may revisit, because if they revisit that...
Where she gets, Ezra, you pulls find out, her, pulls her through right?
Pulls her through time.
Yeah.
If they introduce that... there's
time.
Yeah, time travel, Spencer.
There's time travel in Star Wars.
Yeah,
I don't know how you feel about that.
This is this timeline, and this is this.
Yeah, we're just gonna hop tracks. I just know it. It's coming. You need
to. Well, here's the thing: if
you need to at this junction,
because at a certain point in Rebels, you're under the assumption that Ahsoka dies with, or Ahsoka dies in a fight with Darth Vader, and Darth Vader makes it out.
Which is a very brilliant, even not knowing the end of Rebels, when you get to spoiler, if you still haven't seen Rebels, people, you're really behind.
I know.
But that episode alone broke my heart.
And then
I was like, if I had just ended there, and suddenly I'm like, wait.
When you see him just walk out all
yes.
Destroyed, but he walked out like victorious.
And so we know what happens in the last season. What brings Ahsoka back, I feel like that's going to be a place they're going to traverse into, that time between the times.
Mm-hmm.
So Ezra finds this at the Jedi Temple. He finds this portal, so to speak, that is pure force.
Stargate.
It's essentially... don't listen to her.
I love you enough. It's a Stargate.
Look at Marcus. Don't look at her. Look at Marcus. Just like that. And he essentially is able to walk into different times, like key moments throughout the big moments in the Force. And apparently that was one of them. And he's able to pull Ahsoka before she dies out of time and into the Force manifested. And they barely are able to make it out of there alive. So I feel like that's going to be something that they bring back into. If they're going to reintroduce Hayden, Darth Vader, back into the fray, I would love to see that. I hope and I pray that it isn't a mechanism to try to bring back Kanan.
I see. Yeah.
You see what I'm
saying? Yeah, I see what you're saying there. No, I don't think so. I don't think that's No, I really don't actually. I really don't think cuz you hear, I mean, I didn't really like the movie, but you hear Freddie Prinze Jr.'s voice in the end of episode
the Last makeout. Skywalker, yeah. Or the Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker, yeah.
Ugly Barbie doll.
What?
Sorry, the Ugly Barbie doll movie. That's the only way I remember it. And then everybody putting hero, I need a hero, over the run.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that they're bringing back Darth Vader for that one. But what? Go ahead. You have your hand raised.
Well, I had a question, because is there, like, for you guys, and this was the census of the two of you, because we had Bendu in Rebels, and aside from that one where they're outside with the father and the brother, or the father and the daughter and the son.
Oh.
Are there more, like...
For, like,
So
yeah, because that's
so,
like,
the father is essentially the ultimate balance of the Force, mm-hmm. and then the daughter represents the light side of the Force, and the son. But the father dies, so it's left to the two to maintain the balance.
Mm-hmm. But then we got Bendu.
Bendu, like, he's not a part of that balance. He is a manifestation of the Force itself, which is why he's neither good nor bad. He's neutral, so to speak.
But then what does that make Force ghosts?
Dead.
Ha cha cha. No, but I mean, in, like, the grand scheme of things, does that make them more Bendu-esque?
So Force ghosts are essentially ways that the Force...
I have questions, Marcus.
I thought he's just, you returned from the netherworld of the Force.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. That's what you are. It's like being an alumni and going back to your high school cheering for the team. You have no right to be there, but you show up anyway to cheer for them.
No right to be there?
No, you don't go to that school anymore. You've graduated. You're gone.
By the way, as an aside, going back to Obi-Wan, like, how great was that moment?
Yes.
Even I'm asked, I was like, Master Qui-Gon.
Oh my gosh.
And yes. It's a great moment, because it's like, you know, I think I don't really believe in anything anymore, but growing up the way I grew up, like, you know, your parents are always like, oh yeah, everybody's always with you.
Yeah.
And when he says, I was always here, you just weren't ready to see me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I could hear the pencils and Bibles drop out of pastures clear across this nation watching. It's like, I could put that in a sermon.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, folks, brothers and sisters, he has been there like Qui-Gon.
But for real, like, it's somebody, like, because he just mouths it the same way I did when I watched the video. I was like, Master Qui-Gon, like,
yeah.
Back. And
I think we all did. We're all like, it's Master Qui-Gon. Holy shit in the beginning, but yeah.
And when you just see Liam Neeson, he's like, come on. It took you long enough.
Right. careful. Someone's going to hear this and write a sermon.
It's already happened at least once or twice.
So we got Ahsoka coming up. Also with us, we got Skeleton Crew coming in later this year. There's not a lot to that storyline.
Is that the one with Jude Law?
Yes.
Okay. I thought he was the Acolyte. Oh, no.
That one comes after. So the Acolyte comes next year.
Oh.
Since you're jumping.
Sorry. I wasn't reading the notes. Yeah.
Obviously. So you got the Skeleton Crew, which is kind of apparently a coming of age story. Not really a lot of information around it, other than Jude Law is going to be in it, which means Jude Law is going to be a part of the Star Wars universe. Take that as you will. Mm. And then the Acolyte, which is supposed to, which apparently there's a little bit more information on the Acolyte than there is.
It showed up for real, not for play. Google machine.
Spencer, to the Google machine.
We don't have Google machine music still.
I'll work on that.
Yeah.
So it essentially says Star Wars series that takes viewers into a galaxy of shadowy secrets and emerging dark side powers in the final days of the High Republic era. Ooh. So we're looking at prequel trilogy.
Long time ago.
Are we getting Revan?
I think
the Old Republic.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So
someone's got to make a chart. The internet probably has one, but I don't want to stare at it right now.
That one's geared up for 2024, as I said. And then they had announced there's going to be a Lando series starring Donald Glover. Thankfully, we're going to get the better part of Solo back into the forefront, as long as we don't have the confusing dynamic between him and his robot.
I'm sorry. She's in the Millennium Falcon.
I mean,
calm down.
Between him and the Millennium Falcon. You know? Like, is that a spaceport? Are you just happy to see me?
Oh.
But with all that said, everything that we've talked about, Spencer, with everything that you've seen thus far in the Star Wars universe, how do you guys feel in terms of where Filoni's taking this versus where Lucas has brought us to? Do you feel like where he's... do you think Filoni has created just a new perspective on it, or do you feel like he's just still building off of what Lucas has created? Any thoughts? Anybody first?
I thought that was Spencer first.
Well, I feel like I'm the worst person to ask.
How do you feel?
Because you said your name first. Yeah. That's why
I just wanted to know that I'm including him.
Yeah, but like, I feel like I'm more familiar.
But you've seen the movies.
Yes.
So you have a good understanding of where Lucas has started that universe.
Yes.
Now, in terms of where Filoni has taken it,
I have no idea. I've seen The Mandalorian. Well, and the problem with that is that it's a TV show. He has way more time to just expound on things than that.
That's a good point.
So I haven't seen enough to really say anything. So I'll throw it to Marcus or Amy. What do you guys think?
I think that Lucas tells the monomyth. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he tells the myth. And that's all great. And there's a little bit of, like we've talked about, there's a little bit of surface level, but it's definitely has a bunch of myth in it and feeling of just like a fantastical story. But what Filoni does is he makes it breathe.
Yeah.
Makes it a lived in world that's visceral, that's dirty, that you have a lot of gray areas now, and it makes it more believable, especially for a different audience. You know, yeah. Star Wars, I think it always will be for a younger audience, but I think also as like the audience gets mature as well, like with us with getting older, we know we're not kids anymore, so we can take a little bit more grittiness. Mm. And I think that's what Filoni does really well. He's getting it more gritty, and he's taking from Legends what he wants and putting it into like Ahsoka, mm-hmm. and things like that. So,
Amy?
No, I really agree with Marcus. Filoni and Favreau have continually built upon a story and created worlds that are not only livable, but they are breathing. They are communities. They are taking legacy and continuing to carry it to generations and generations and generations. With regards to how I feel about how Filoni's doing with it, he's doing the best that anybody can do when you are sifting through fanfic from 92 when it was a sketchy show that you liked and somebody wrote some really weird slash stuff we don't talk about. And he's not only cherry-picked the best parts, but he's also acknowledged where it's come from. Mm. I think probably one of the best ways to even say how much he cares about this, not only fandom, but this community and this universe as a whole, was when he brought in Ahmed Best. And he gave him the reprieval. And just a little backstory for Spencer, Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah. No, he was in the Mandalorian as that one.
As he's Saber Hand. But yeah, he's a Jedi Master. And the funny thing is that ties into a YouTube series that Disney and Star Wars did, which was literally like Legends of the Hidden Temple, but for teams of little love like kids to do. And they had to go through Jedi trials, and he was their Jedi Master. And I thought that was such a nice way to not only go, yes, this was you here, but let me reintroduce you back to the universe. Let them see who you are.
Yeah.
And it was not only a deft stroke of genius, but a sweet sign of compassion and remembering where they came from and where they're continuing to go.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, I did recognize his face. And I was like, why do I know this guy from something?
Because of the giant stick
because of the 200 angry letters you've written to him.
I didn't write any.
And the picture of him in your room with the darts in his head.
How dare you.
We don't need Jamaicans in space.
Poor Gungans.
Wow.
I have to agree. I think Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have been the ever much needed voice of reason for the direction of this franchise for a long time. I believe George Lucas created the sandbox to which this universe lives in, and with his selling it to Disney, it has given the opportunity. And mind you, that hasn't always been the case. Mm-hmm. Selling franchises to other people to take it over and build it better hasn't always worked out. But his selling the Star Wars franchise to Disney so that Disney could have somebody like Kathleen Kennedy decide to give Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau an opportunity to build out this universe that has been pretty one note for the most part of it, mm-hmm. outside of Ewoks and C-3PO and R2-D2, hasn't been much else, and give it this new sense of life, this new sense of, like Marcus so eloquently put, you know, this lived-in universe feel. And I think, kind of to what Amy had mentioned, I feel like the most obvious statement of this and their love and their affection towards this was in the last Star Wars Celebration, where Dave Filoni was talking about the success of all of these things and all these things, all of the stories and everything that's to come, and was literally brought to tears because he said it wasn't him, but it was all the fans, all the people who continue to believe, who continue to pour out their hearts, continue to give stories, continue to talk about what this franchise means in the wholeness of it. We're looking at least a, what, 50, 60-year-old fandom that has stood the test of time, because there have been other fandoms that, you know, may have fallen by the wayside, mm-hmm. other fandoms who have tried to get revitalized with a show here or there or even a video game, but it hasn't hit the same amount of you know, ground running mm-hmm. as Star Wars does, as with the series that have been created, as with the cartoons, the animation, the future series, mm-hmm. the vignettes. We are living in an age where Star Wars is... it's okay to be a massive fan about Star Wars, because everybody is now seeing something of themselves in the universe. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to be the gunslinging Mandalorian. Everybody wants to be, you know, the villainous bounty hunter like Cad Bane. Other people want to be the territory king of like Boba Fett. Everybody wants to be these different facets of these very ambiguous characters, whether they're anti-heroes or they're just straight up villains, seeing turns like with Fennec Shand, things like characters that people have known for a while and have just been in love with, and just finding a way to root for them in some form or fashion. Like we said, the franchise as a whole has always been about relationships. Mm-hmm. And one of the greatest things that Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have done is recognize that relationships in the movie are not as important as the relationships created outside of the franchise, which is why he goes every year to Star Wars Celebration. Mm-hmm. He talks mm-hmm. about it as often as yeah. he can. He is always looking to the fans for the inspiration and the motivation to keep doing what he's doing. And I heard a rumor not too long ago that Kathleen Kennedy is actually making a push to move the overall design of what the universe used to look like pre-Filoni and just let Filoni run wild and essentially make it Filoni's universe. Mm-hmm. Obviously, George Lucas created it, so forth, but Filoni would essentially have full reign and terror over all of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I feel like that's an okay direction to go. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not that is something that has longevity within the next 10 years, 15 years, or maybe the next just 3 years, who's to say? But right now, living in this day and age, Star Wars is an absolute gem for us fans who have been fans for a long time, who have, you know, talked about it to those people who've just had it up to their heads with, you know, hearing about Star Wars. Like, I don't want to hear it anymore about Star Wars. Did you see the football game? Like, no, I don't know.
Sorry, Spencer.
I'm not into the football game. You know that.
I was like, what? Spencer. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those kind of things where being a nerd hasn't always been easy being a nerd. And we all can attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pre-2008, we all used to kind of just have our comic books and just talk about it amongst other comic book people.
When Iron Man came out.
Yeah. And then
the day Robert Downey Jr. fell from the sky.
Exactly. Yeah. And literally just changed the way everybody sees Iron Man, Captain America, yeah. the Incredible Hulk, you know, the entire, you know, cast of the Guardians of the Galaxy, every aspect of, like, even in the more, you know, knowing individuals like with the Sandman, mm-hmm. you know, and with elements of, like, you know, the Creature Commandos that are going to mm-hmm. be coming out for DC and all these other things, where people are taking it as a passion project and not just a, you know, oh, paycheck project. Okay, cool. Let's just get this done. So I don't know. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. I'm excited to see Dave Filoni continue to do what he does. I'm excited to see the man with the cowboy hat every time Star Wars Celebration comes out. So any last thoughts before we wrap up?
Star Wars is great.
That it is.
Awesome.
The galaxy that was long ago and far, far away seems a lot closer now.
That is very eloquently put. Yeah. Spencer, any last thoughts? And if you say live long and prosper, I'm going to throw something at you.
No.
No?
Yeah.
I took a second to take a breath and you're like, no. Star Wars is one of those kind of franchises where we as fans can only hope and pray pray that as it continues, it just gets bigger and bolder and steps more outside the box. And as continual fans, we will always be hoping for that. We will always be watching. And yeah, we're excited to see what comes up next for this particular franchise. As Amy grabs her lightsaber.
What?
Are you going to ignite it or are you just going
to
sit
there? No, I'm waiting for the proper time to ignite it.
Ah, okay. Well, that about wraps up another awesome and special episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, TuneIn, iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire. You can check us out there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow. Give us a subscribe. Give us a five-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes. And Marcus is nodding, so that's a yes, too.
Yes.
Oh, he has no obligation. You have an obligation.
Yeah, it's more you than Marcus.
Oh, no.
You can also check us out wherever over on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. There you can check out all of our great antics as well as other properties that we offer such as Spencer's Big Score and Jane Unseen, which can be found where, Amy?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen on Instagram. Yes.
Yes. You can also check us out at our website at filmlosophers.com. There you can check out all of our great episodes, allegedly over 300, where we have everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, romance, even stuff about Star Wars. We cover that too here. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com. We want to give a big thanks to Marcus. Thank you for joining us tonight,
thank
man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
This was a great conversation. And of course, talking Star Wars is a everyday kind of thing that we can do here, and thankfully we were able to all come together for this auspicious, wonderful holiday of Star Wars Day. So if you're out there celebrating, make sure you celebrate appropriately, and you stay away from Alderaan. So
you're looking for jokes in Alderaan places.
Well, that about wraps up our episode. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Marcus.
Oh, wait. I'm still, Padawan learner Amy, I guess.
Wow. Class dismissed.
My button doesn't work.
Class dismissed.
Oh, man.